I'm Ava Susie, and I'm here with
Dawn Tatum.
And we're here to talk about your life, your teaching career, basically everything. There's an article written about you in the Campus Comment last issue, so we kind of want to do a follow-up interview and have like an audio version almost. Yeah, so I was reading, you were a BMX racer when you were a kid. Do you want to tell me a little bit about that?
Yes, I raced BMX, which a lot of people think, oh, she raced motorcycles. But no, I raced good old-fashioned bicycles where you had to pedal. And it was interesting because this was not a thing that girls were doing at the time. This is like 83, 84, 19, by the way. I'm not 18, 83, 84. But, and I did that because my brother got involved with a bunch of boys on the road out in the country I live. So, yeah, I said, I can do that. I can do anything a boy does. So, started racing BMX. And, you know, lots of fun.
Yeah, for sure. And you was reading in the story that your dad was so on board with it.
Yeah, you know, I'm the oldest, and so my brother's 6 years younger than I am. And so early on, I was the son that my dad was expecting. And so I was a big tomboy back in the day. That's what we would call somebody who was like, I don't like dresses, I don't like pink. That was me. I wanted to build and run and play baseball and do those things. So that when my brother had started, I thought, well, I can do just as much damage as he could on the track. Dad was like, I'll get you a bike if you want to race. And that's how it took off. So he was like totally for it.
Yeah. But I imagine growing up in like Victoria, Texas, right?
Yes.
It was like a little non-traditional.
Yeah, you know, people who know me might recognize that I don't necessarily fit a traditional category in the way I think or act or do. And so I think my parents, although much to their chagrin at times that I followed my own pattern, my dad was like, you can do it. And so once we started racing, there were two other girls around the same age as I was. Again, we were 13 and 14. That had brothers. This is how we all got involved. We had brothers or, you know, cousins that were involved, and that's how we jumped into racing. So, yeah, there were three of us in the giant South Texas community that raced. And when we went to state competitions, we go to Austin or Corpus or Houston, to larger BMX rallies, you would find that our numbers were never really more than maybe, you know, 20 at those really large competitions. So, yeah, we stood out a little bit.
Yeah, that's awesome, especially like growing up in a small town, or not small town, but like in a rural town and having like that early streak of rebellion.
Yeah, for sure.
How do you see that changing and like shaping you growing up and having that?
Let's see. That's interesting. Like I said, I think secretly my mom was much more supportive of it, although she wouldn't necessarily come out and say it. My dad was just kind of at times for some of those bolder choices where it was, again, I could be the boy, do the boy things. He was okay. Some of my outside thinking and seeing the world and thinking outside of our smaller community, and again, it was the city of Victoria, but we lived out in a rural community about 40 minutes outside of it, so even smaller. I think that sometimes getting that oh my gosh reaction fueled me a little bit more. You might say I liked to be a little bit rebellious, because oftentimes what I believed was right or good or okay for a young lady or a girl to do, others would say no, and that fueled me more in my convictions. And I think that stayed with me even when I had family members that didn't always support it. I just stayed strong in myself.
Yeah. So leaving your town of Victoria and going to college, tell me about that experience, how you got into history.
You know, I've indicated in some other interviews that I did really well in social studies. I liked history. I was a teacher pleaser. You know, I wasn't always the smartest in the class, but I did well in history. And so once I started thinking about studying archaeology and anthropology, my dad was like, that's not a career. You can't make a living off of that, which should have fueled me more in that direction. But I was like, okay, Dad, he does have some background. He's got some experience. So when I finally did go away to school, I was like, history is easy. It's interesting. And so I kind of just launched myself into that curriculum. And then, of course, that opened all kinds of other forays, because there's so many different organizations and then different people you meet and specialties within that major. So I really branched out, and there was much more than just she's a history teacher, she's going to, you know, get a history degree. So yeah, I branched out quite a bit. And part of that too, I think, is that it led me to studying other cultures. And other philosophies and religions and literature, and that really opened up my worldview, as mm-hmm. opposed to just different and challenging the norms of American culture or Texas culture or my family. It became this bigger perspective yeah. that I took on, I think.
And so in college, I know you've touched on in class how you wrote your thesis on British feminist literature.
I did.
Can you tell me a little bit about that? Because I think that's so interesting.
Yeah, After I graduated with a bachelor's in history, then I started teaching. And within a couple of years, I decided to go back and get my master's. So I was going to night school and summer school while still having my teaching career. And I had a really great professor who actually, for our small University of Houston Victoria branch campus, because I went back to the town and was teaching where I grew up, he actually chose University of Houston, but the branch campus, because he had smaller class loads, and that allowed him to go back and teach every other semester at Oxford. So what I got was an Oxford professor in Victoria, Texas, working for University of Houston, and his area of concentration was British history, and he specialized in British feminism and World War II. So you can imagine I latched on to not only the depth of this professor's ability, but oh my gosh, you know, what an interesting foray for somebody who, again, saw the world a little differently. You don't oftentimes think of feminism, let alone British feminism, as an area of concentration. So yeah, that's kind of where it took me and how that pathway ended up. I've never taught British feminism, but I have totally used components of that in teaching world history or AP courses in history, and then just general knowledge mm-hmm. and application in my life.
Yeah. I think that's really good too, to have like a background in a very like niche subject, but even it being a niche subject, it extends so far into a lot of different curriculum, especially in like the types of history.
Yeah,
you teach.
Totally. Absolutely. You should never be afraid to seek out something to read or something to study that may be off the beaten path, because it does. Mm-hmm. You were led there for a reason, and if it doesn't fall directly into what you end up doing, it does expand your thinking and reasoning. And aren't we really all about knowing about our world? Mm-hmm. And it's not a microcosm.
Exactly. So having that great professor experience, did that shape in any way your desire to become a teacher, or did that come from somewhere else?
I would say that having had really excellent teachers in my secondary career, from high school into some really great college professors, showed me what I wanted to do in the classroom and guided my decisions on the way I would approach students and my subject matter. Because at the end of the day, you can have somebody who's really smart and technically hits all the marks for being an educator, but are they a great educator? Do they reach children? Do they make a difference? And so I just was absorbing, without even knowing, those traits that most fit my learning, and that also showed true understanding of students and what they were wanting and what their needs and interests were. And I tried to wrap that up in my teaching. And I think that at the beginning, it was very, very difficult, because I had this grandiose notion of how I was going to come in and be like the best teacher and every kid would love my subject. And I failed a lot. Lots of failure. But I tell my kids all the time, you have to fail, mm-hmm. you know? And so, no, nobody would have said, ooh, Miss Tatum, let me take that second, third, fifth year teacher. They would have been like, ooh, she's a little crazy. And it doesn't always work. But I think that just continued failures and then continued successes and the reactions of students
yeah.
have led me to be the teacher that I am.
Yeah. So, okay, tell me about, I know you've taught in bigger schools, so Fredericksburg is definitely a little bit of a change. Tell me about your experience in bigger schools in comparison to Fredericksburg.
Yeah, it's funny that I'm ending my career in the smallest district and the smallest school ever. I've never taught in a community where there's only one high school or there is such a sense of community around the kids and what the kids are doing and what the kids are being taught and every single component of what they do. And it's different. It's a bit of a challenge. But it's a nice, I would say, closure to a career where I never thought I would teach at a campus that had 4,000 plus students. And people have a hard time wrapping their head around how do you have 4,000 students on a campus? It's a really big campus. Okay. You've seen the Titanic. So think of the whole length of a ship, the Titanic, and multiple stories, and that was our school. And you get in your niche. And so my social studies department that I was the department chair of, we had 33 teachers. 33 teachers just teaching social studies, so you know what's going on in it's like a sub-community, that was so interesting. And you learn different teaching skill sets to have and mechanisms to manage a population. I always tell my kids, no matter if it was a small or a large school, the population of students numbers the adults. So rise up and revolution. It's easy. You've got the numbers, right? And yet students don't do that. But hey, that's a good revolution waiting to happen. But yeah, it's changed me. So from, giant districts that were their own districts, Cy-Fair ISD in Houston, to really diverse districts, meaning again all types of ethnic and racial and religious backgrounds, which brought such diversity and uniqueness to how you taught, to a microcosm of teaching in the Rio Grande Valley, where it was all concentrated in all Hispanic culture, and really being in a different part of the country. I mean, because it was. I was in a portion of Mexico, not only historically, but obviously culturally. So, I mean, I think that it has really just broadened my horizons so that when I teach and have moved around, which is a great component of teaching too, you don't have to stay in the same community. And there's so much to learn, and you always have a job. Dad, you were right. You always have a job. Yeah, it just made me a better teacher.
Yeah, definitely. I think, I mean, you can kind of see how much this community has appreciated you in your 2 years here. I feel like every 3 seconds I'm hearing something awesome about Miss Tatum,
Well, that's
and I can
kind.
attest to, like, you've been a great addition to the Fredericksburg campus. Do you have any advice for someone who's going to replace you next year and take all your courses? Obviously, no one can replace you, but.
No. Yeah, there are so many great teachers in Fredericksburg that I have met. Truly, there are some really great teachers. I would say whoever takes up the AP Human and the AP Euro and the AP Psych and the Sociology and the Dual Credit US History to just relish every single moment that you have with those students. Because, people say all the time, oh, it's a great job. Oh, it's a... You need to really go in there and enjoy every moment. The hardness of the curriculum and the difficulty and the amount of work you have to do, you need to relish it because you are being given a gift to teach such diverse subjects to kids who are there because they choose to be there. And that's a gift, right? I haven't always taught students who chose to be in my classes or chose a harder curriculum. I've taught the gamut, regular classes, AP classes, sped class. It doesn't matter, but you have to enjoy it and you have to throw yourself into it. And if that means you work harder than your kids, you need to do it. Because if you do that, they will do anything for you. And really enjoy it.
We'd now like to give a quick shout out to our Platinum Plus sponsors: Bee Creek Communications, Young Life, Chicken Express, First Class Glass, Hill and Vine, Hills of Texas Homes, McLean Ford, Neary Construction, and Capital Farm Credit. Thank you so much for your support. Now let's get back to the episode.
tell me about some of your plans after you retire.
Well,
what if I'm dying to know?
I panic a little bit because I'm now on day 50 of the countdown to commencement, which we're all excited about because, mm-hmm. yay, graduation. But what does that look like? I really thought for a long time that I would be that old lady that doesn't leave. You know, the one that, like, is she like 60, 70, 80? Why is she still in that room? But then I did realize that life is precious, and there are things that I teach and talk about that I still haven't seen. And so travel is a big component. Now, traveling is expensive, but not if you do it the way that Mr. Tatum and I plan to do quite a bit of it. And that is, we are converting an old bus into our own travel unit that we can haul the pets we want to haul with us. It's built durable because Mr. Tatum and I have built and done our own work on vehicles and homes. So yeah, we're going to hit the road and travel, and we may be gone for a month, and then we may be back, you know, for 6 months, or we may go for a 3-day road trip here and a 6-day road trip there. So we're going to do a lot domestically within the first, you know, year to two. And then by that time, he'll be really excited about travel even more than I am. And I hope to conveniently help him soothe his nerves and get on some planes and travel.
Oh, is he afraid of flying?
He is. Which, you know, doesn't help when you turn on the news and there's another plane episode.
Yeah.
Or train episode. So, I you know, we will figure it out. But definitely, I've got to get to some of those locations that, you know, I've always wanted to travel. Especially where I have friends or former students that I can reconnect to.
Yeah. Is there anywhere in particular outside the United States you're looking to go?
Well, I have been to some lovely locations, and I don't necessarily believe in going back to where you've traveled. There's so much to see. But I would love to visit Ireland again because it was such a tranquil location and the people were so great, and Mr. Tatum hasn't been there. But I would love to go to India. I want to immerse myself in Indian culture and then get to Africa.
How exciting. What parts of Africa do you want to go to?
Interestingly enough, prior to meeting Mr. Tatum, I had applied to teach internationally. A lot of people don't know that. Because I thought, well, this is what my life is going to hold. There's no reason to stay in Texas. It's okay. And I will head out as an independent single woman. And I was always heading towards, you know, Mozambique. But, you know, who knows? Yeah. Wherever the world would take me.
Honestly, that's a great mentality. And just kind of be free with it. It's a lot of stress if you kind of bog yourself down. And you're like, I'm doing this, this, and this.
Exactly. And that's the thing, too. We're open to travel. But, again, a lot of people who have had me know that my strong suit is not necessarily always working with people or being around people. I'm super comfortable with teenagers all day long. The adults kind of scare me sometimes. And I'm no different from anybody else. I have fears, you know, and concerns about travel or not knowing and not being comfortable in awkward or difficult situations. But it's something that as humans, we grow and we overcome.
Yeah. I think it's so interesting. You've told us in class before that you have always kind of been an introvert throughout your life. But I mean, any of the kids in your class from the first day wouldn't have any idea. Just because you're always very loud and out there. So why do you think it is that you can be so vivacious in class and you like sometimes don't feel like you connect with people who aren't in the classroom that way?
Yeah, I am an introvert. And again, if students would watch me, like I'm always teaching them to watch, you know, good students using psychology and geography are always observing the world around them. But if you watched me interact with adults outside of school or even inside of school, I am a quieter person. I am much more reserved, especially if I don't know the scenario or the situation or individuals. Coming into Fredericksburg is a very scary community to come into, not because it's Fredericksburg, but because everybody knows everybody, and that's even scarier. Put me in Houston with all the diversity and people I don't know, I can handle that even better than being on the outside.
Yeah.
And so, again, the adult piece, that's always been around, but my belief in what I do with students and my passion for true learning occurring in the classroom pushes me beyond any kind of fear. I don't mind people laughing at me and laughing at my laugh and laughing at my jokes, which are not funny, or thinking I'm making a fool of myself in my teaching. I don't care, because in the end, you are learning. And I am the great puppet master of learning, which, again, if you know me long enough, you're like, she talks about that, and she's been doing that since I've met her. Like, yeah, exactly.
And it works.
It works, and it's good, and we have fun. Yeah. So, yeah, that's why.
Yeah. That's honestly probably a great, like, trait to have coming into, like, a community like Fredericksburg and, like, kind of feeling like you're on the outside, especially with, like, classes you teach being, like, human geography or any of that, being able to kind of impart.
Right.
Yeah.
Apply that, for mm-hmm. sure.
Awesome. Well, I don't want to take too much of your time. We've got about 3 minutes till the bell. So is there anything you want to say to your students, especially who will listen to this?
Well, why aren't you doing your homework? But more importantly than that, if I could say one parting thing, and I hope I'll have some more chances before the year is up, I thank every student that I've had here at Fredericksburg. In fact, I thank every student I've ever taught. At the end of the day, whether you gave me a hard time or you gave me the best of time, you did make it worth the time. So thanks.
That was great. Thank you so much for coming in, and I guess we'll be back next week with a new episode.
Thanks for having me.
Bye.
Bye.
It was perfect. Thank you so much.
Hey guys, thanks for listening to Billy's Backstage. Tune in next week for a brand new episode.
If you're interested in being featured in the next podcast, please contact @FHSMESA on Instagram.
Or scan the QR code scattered around campus.
Bye.